This week, the United States sends its top economic diplomat to Africa. We'll discuss Janet Yellen's visits to Senegal, South Africa, and Zambia following the Chinese foreign minister's trip to the continent. What do these visits accomplish? And how does the U.S. plan to counter Beijing in African countries? Also, a sitting and a former U.S. president are being investigated for their handling of classified government records. We'll have the latest on the political and legal fallout. Straight Talk Africa starts now.
Hello there and welcome to the show. I'm Heidi Adams. It is so great to be with you. Now, we'll discuss the U.S. Treasury Secretary's visit to Africa in a moment, but first, the latest on the drama unfolding in U.S. politics. A sitting president and his predecessor are both under scrutiny over their handling of highly sensitive classified government documents. For months now, the U.S. Justice Department has been investigating former President Donald Trump for allegedly mishandling top secret government files that were discovered at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. Now, President Joe Biden finds himself in hot water after two batches of classified documents were discovered at his home and a private office he used while he was vice president. Both President Biden and former President Trump are now under separate investigations by a special counsel. And joining me now to discuss the legal and political fallout from the saga is Steve Reddish. He's an executive producer in VOA's News Center. Steve, great to see you. Thank you for always coming in and helping us understand what is going on. But, you know, commentators have pointed out that there is a difference between the two situations, that of President Biden and that of former President Trump. What's the legal fallout for both of these men?
The issue of handling of classified documents is a serious issue. The legal fallout, the legal peril for each one of them depends on the intent that they had regarding holding the documents. From all that we know of the reporting and from what the White House has said, the discovery of documents in the Biden case were handled immediately. The documents were turned over when discovered to the National Archives. The Justice Department got involved very quickly. Within a week, Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed someone to oversee it. And more documents were discovered. The biggest issue for the Biden administration and for President Biden is more political than legal so far that we know, as far as the investigation that we know right now. In former President Trump's case, the documents that he held were known by the National Archives. They knew what was missing from everything that was supposed to come back from the Trump White House. They had a list of documents that hadn't come back. They asked for them. There was a back and forth between the National Archives and the Trump attorneys. Eventually, the Justice Department was asked to get involved. That then led to a subpoena for the documents. Then when the Justice Department felt that there wasn't enough cooperation and they knew that there were still documents out there, they went and executed a search warrant. So it goes to the intent of the person holding the documents, in that this is the property of the United States government, the people of the United States, not necessarily the person who holds the documents.
And then briefly, what's the political fallout for these two men, each of whom is the standard bearer for their political party?
And it looks like both will be running for president. Trump has already announced and Biden is expected to announce. The political peril is the appearances. It could be that that ex-President Trump gets prosecuted for what he has done with these documents. We will see, because there is a special counsel overseeing it. The same thing with President Biden. He could get prosecuted, but the idea of intent and politically for President Biden, this comes at a time where he's about to engage Republican Congress that is going to investigate not just this issue, but all kinds of other issues involving his administration and involving the investigations of ex-President Trump. So politically, it is not a good look for President Biden right now, because he tries to hold himself at a place where the law stands.
Steve, should other governments, though, be concerned about what appears to be some lapses in the protection of U.S. secrets? We've heard these are not just American secrets, but may involve nuclear secrets, may involve countries like China, Iran, who knows, even African countries, Russia, too. Who knows? I mean, is there anything that African governments or other governments could be concerned about here?
Absolutely. The kind of documents that have been reportedly found in the hands of ex-President Trump seems to have value and seems to include issues that go beyond the United States, that involve the security of other countries, that involve perhaps the nuclear capabilities of other countries. So yes, there is going to be some concern among governments around the world about whether or not the United States can hold the secrets that it has. And some of those secrets involve other countries and people in other countries.
And as we spoke earlier, and we know this is front page headlines here every day, but Steve, 2 years from now, is this something we might still be talking about? And especially going into 2024, and as we mentioned, both Trump and Biden potentially being the front runners for their parties, and we might see a rematch there. Will voters care?
Political issues go by like that. I mean, what is hot today may be forgotten 2 weeks from now. I don't think, though, that this issue is going to disappear very quickly, because if the ex-president gets prosecuted for this, that is going to entail a long trial. It's going to last at least a year, if not longer, as far as from the time the indictment is issued to the time a jury reaches its verdict. As far as the Biden issue is concerned, that also depends on how deep this goes and whether or not more documents are found. So far, we have about 24 documents that have been found. Some of them are marked top secret. It depends on what's in them. And whether or not the Republicans on Capitol Hill can draw this out as well to be a campaign issue.
Well, Steve, it looks like this is going to get only more interesting. Steve British, thank you always, as always, for your time and for coming in and helping break things down for us. I do appreciate it.
Thanks for asking me.
Well, still ahead, U.S. efforts to counter China's advances across Africa kicking into high gear. Both the U.S. and China have sent top diplomats to Africa. After the break, we'll look at U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's visit to the continent this week. Why is she visiting and why now? Stay with us.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
Covering the continent every day from east to west, north to south. That's VOA Africa 54. We bring you the latest news and development from Africa. Politics, health, tech, and everything in between. We're on it. Our network of reporters and analysts are on hand to add perspective to all our reports. Join me, Esther Githu-Ewart, Monday through Friday, right here on VOA's Africa 54.
You're with Straight Talk Africa. Welcome back. The White House has dispatched its top economic diplomat to Africa. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is on a three-nation tour of the continent. She's visiting Senegal, South Africa, and Zambia. Now, her trip comes just weeks after President Joe Biden pledged to expand and deepen relations with the continent at the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit here in Washington. VOA's Mariama Diallo has more.
And I'm eager to visit your continent. As I told some of you, you invited me to your countries. I said, be careful what you wish for.
President Joe Biden acted on a promise he made last month at the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington. He's sending U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen to Senegal, Zambia, and South Africa to strengthen economic ties with the continent. Cameron Hudson is a senior associate with the Center for Strategic and International Studies Africa Program.
And this is, I think, the first of hopefully many steps to engage Africans on the continent. But there's an overall message, I think, that they're trying to send as well, which is that Washington is present. And that message is not only for the Africans, but it's for Chinese, it's for Russians competing with the United States in these markets.
Senior Treasury officials say the purpose of the trip is to learn from and exchange ideas with African government officials, private sector leaders, entrepreneurs, and youth to deepen economic ties between the U.S. and Africa and chart out new opportunities for trade and investment. First stop will be Senegal to meet with President Macky Sall, the African Union chair, whose country is also a strong member of the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS. This is an opportunity for Sall to discuss unfair international trade practices, says Chisanga Chekwe, president of the Canada-based Masomo Education Foundation charity.
Among the four most efficient cotton producers in the world are Benin, Burkina Faso, Chad, and Mali. Three of these countries are in ECOWAS, and all four are in the AU. Here's an interesting thing. Despite their efficiency, they only contribute 3%. To world cotton production. The reason for that is cotton production is heavily subsidized and really tends to distort markets.
Chekwe is also the author of books on African issues, especially in Zambia, where he says America sees an opportunity to counter Chinese influence with a new government considered pro-West.
It is seen as a government that is wary of China. One area, possible area of immediate cooperation is a restructuring of the $6 billion debt that Zambia has to China. And let's remember that makes up about 24-25% of the country's GDP.
In 2020, Zambia became the first African country in the pandemic era to default on its debt. But whether money is owed to China or financial institutions, Zambia is not the only African country with a debt burden, says Hudson.
Ghana, another, I think, very successful African country, really experiencing, a mounting crisis there. And so Washington is seen as partly responsible because, like it or not, Washington is seen as controlling the international financial institutions of the World Bank and the IMF, which have, pushed for more austerity measures on African states, kept interest rates for international lending very high to African states, and at the same time have been very critical of concessionary lending that they've received from China and Russia and others outside of the multilateral system.
The U.S. Treasury Secretary met with Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema at the summit last month, telling him that she was looking forward to talking about the international financial institutions' role in supporting Zambia's economic recovery and the need to work on a debt treatment for Zambia under the Common Framework, an initiative endorsed by the G20, as quickly as possible. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Well, now, to help us understand the dynamics at play here, I have with me here in studio Phibokuhle Mnyandu. He's a professor of African studies at Howard University here in Washington and the author of the book South Africa-China Relations Between Aspiration and Reality in a New Global Order. And joining us via Skype from Taipei, Taiwan, is Zhijong Wang. She's a PhD candidate in political science at Ohio State University and a doctoral research fellow on China at Boston University. Zhijong and Phibokuhle, welcome to both of you. So great to have you. And Phibokuhle, I'm going to start with you. With this visit, what will political and the business leaders in countries like Senegal, South Africa, and Zambia read into the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's visit to their countries?
Well, if you look at the recently concluded U.S.-Africa summit, there was a preponderance of opinion among the African leaders, and they were quite outspoken about it, that we need to more fellowship with the U.S., and this fellowship must be around business infrastructure. And in other words, the U.S. must start building things in Africa. So this right here proves that the U.S. is actually walking the talk on putting paid to some of these talks that, look, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 2 years we see a lot of buildings in countries like Zambia and Senegal as a result of this visit. The fact that it's 10 days means a lot.
Zhijong, Janet Yellen's visit comes, of course, hot on the heels of China's new foreign minister, Qin Gang's visit to Benin, Angola, Egypt, and Ethiopia. An interesting fact here, Qin Gang used to be China's ambassador to the United States. How significant is that fact, and what do you think the Chinese foreign minister's trip to these particular African countries really accomplished?
Yes, it has been a decade-long practice since 1991 for Chinese ministers of foreign affairs to make multi-country tours in Africa every January. Qin Gang was appointed to the position in December 2022, and this is his first January African trip. So I would view this trip as Qin Gang's debut in Africa to familiarize him with key partners in the continent and to reinforce China's relations with key African partners. And to that extent, I think the trip was quite successful. Most destinations picked in the past decade have either strong economic ties or are of geostrategic importance for China or has long historical ties. Most are larger countries, both in terms of GDP or population, but on every trip, usually one or two smaller countries are included to broadcast China's interest in maintaining and reinforcing ties across all the continents. The choice of these five countries, most of them are safe choices. These are well-known countries that have been visited multiple times by ministers in the past decade. And this is a great position, a great pick for Minister Qin Gang as a new Minister of Foreign Affairs, who is also the youngest person to hold this position in the past 60 years.
Phibokuhle, I want to pull up this quote here written by Thomas P. Sheehy. He is a distinguished fellow at the U.S. Institute of Peace. And he writes, "The United States should focus its diplomatic energy on challenging truly sensitive Chinese activities involving telecommunications and strategic minerals, for example. A U.S. message that all Chinese economic activity in Africa is concerning confuses the issue and is self-defeating, as China will remain a major player in Africa. It also lands flat with Africans who strongly desire greater trade and investment." Do you agree with this, Phibokuhle? And are the Chinese activities, are all those activities genuinely problematic for the United States?
Yes, I think I agree with this. What we're getting here is that Africa is very much, it's something the Africans have always been insisting on. It's a diverse continent with a diversity of issues, challenges. And as such, the countries have always wanted to be taken seriously and to be differentiated. And so they've always wanted the Western world to differentiate its approach to these African countries. China, to its credit, if you one might say, and according to this perspective, has always viewed Africa, has always been sensitive to these different aspirations of different African countries. I'm very optimistic that here in the U.S., where actually we have learned to differentiate Africa and looking at where Treasury Secretary is going to visit, the countries that she's going to visit, it looks like some lessons have been learned on differentiating Africa.
Zhijong, what is your take on this? Does the United States necessarily see all of China's activities in Africa as a threat?
So there are beneficial and problematic sides to Chinese activities in Africa, clearly. On the beneficial side, the combination of Chinese construction companies and Chinese loan financing greatly boosted large-scale infrastructure development in Africa, a sector that traditional development financiers such as the World Bank has been retreating from for decades. Mega projects such as transborder railways, hydropower dams, or thermal power plants tends to find easier financing access and lower barriers with Chinese contractors and Chinese financial access. On the other hand, there has been concerns that these costly mega projects have negative environmental and social impacts and questionable long-term sustainability prospects, some of the very reasons that made traditional financiers cautious decades before. So Chinese financiers and contractors, citing China's principles of non-interference, tend to leave these issues to the host government, even though the host government themselves may not have the capacity to implement it.
Pibukusha, China accounts for about 12% of Africa's external debt. That's an estimated $700 billion. And we've seen Zambia and Ghana have already defaulted on their debt obligations. Janet Yellen has said it's the single biggest obstacle to progress in terms of resolving the debt crises on the continent. The Chinese foreign minister says this is an unfair label, and he has defended Chinese lending practices on the continent. Who, in your view, is right and wrong? Can both be right? Can both of them be wrong?
I'd say the latter. Both have a point. Look, let's be honest and clear about African debt. Most African countries have had a debt problem since independence. They inherited some of this debt from colonial times. And in the 1990s, during structural adjustment, some of these African countries were able, they actually faced investor boycott. And China was able to kind of sneak in there, if you will, and start kind of like handing out some of these, parceling out some of this debt to African countries, create compounding an existing problem. So I think Treasury Secretary is quite right that we must enjoin kind of all parties must come to the party and basically have a solution for each African country. China and the United States have a role to play in eliminating some of these problematic debts that African countries have incurred.
Zhijong, what's your take on this specific question? And I also want to ask you whether you're seeing any signs of relationships between some African countries and China waning, just as some relationships have waned between the United States and some African countries.
So in terms of loan financing, which is an area that receives a lot of attention, we're seeing some of the heavy borrowers in the mid-2010s, such as Angola and Zambia, retreating from borrowing across all fronts, including from China. And this is a reflection of the debt problem that we are seeing. It is a holistic issue. It is not just bilateral debts from China. It is also debt with multilateral organization and especially market rate instruments such as the Eurobonds.
Pibukushle, is the United States really playing catch up here? And where do you see opportunities for the United States to come in and do just that where they need to? Where are there opportunities for the U.S. to, in their efforts to counter China, to expand their influence?
I think already work has been done for the United States, thanks to primordial people-to-people relations that are quite amicable between Africa and America. Africans kind of have a fondness for America in general, and American soft power, American media, has already worn out the continent, if you will, if we're talking about competition. So there are very significant fields of endeavor, like culture, people-to-people relations, that the United States has advantage on. I think investing more in these, and we've seen some pins being moved on this, that is an area, I would say, that America can take advantage of, and China is struggling in on the African continent.
Zhijong, we know that this is something the Chinese do every year. They kickstart, of course, their travel in Africa. But Janet Yellen going this early on in the year, how do you think the U.S.-China rivalry, if you want to call it that, how are we going to see it play out this year, particularly on the African continent?
So over the past two decades, China has and continues to play an outsized role in infrastructure development in Africa, particularly in sectors of transportation, energy generation, and telecommunications. So Chinese companies has advantages in these sectors stems both from the support of Chinese policy banks using loan instruments and also the companies themselves. Many Chinese major infrastructure companies operating in Africa have experience in building China's own infrastructure in the 80s and 90s on a shoestring budget and very difficult construction environments. As a result, they tend to be able to offer lower prices for the projects and higher risk tolerance. So if U.S. companies want their favorite telecom companies to gain more market share in Africa, it will first need to overcome the financing barriers facing African governments. There are, however, sectors that the U.S. have advantages in. The non-interference principle by China is both a blessing and a curse. Because of the non-interference principle, areas such as counterterrorism and peacekeeping training are areas that China usually eschews, and areas that the U.S. has a lot of experience in and already existing ties with African states. In addition, areas such as education and health sector are also areas that the U.S. is stronger in.
We know, of course, and as Zhizhong was talking about how the United States is going to have to change, to what extent is the U.S. going to have to change its traditional way of engaging African countries? And I assume each African country has to be engaged differently. I mean, these are different economies, different circumstances, different playgrounds, essentially. But what big changes will the United States really have to make to show that it is serious?
I'll mention one example. During the U.S.-Africa summit, many African leaders grumbled that they were unable to get bilateral leader-to-leader meetings with the U.S. president. When they go to China, each African country gets bilateral leader-to-leader meetings. So that is one area already of strength. But from a positive perspective, the fact that we had this U.S.-Africa summit and there were equal, the very robust exchanges with the Africans didn't feel like they were being preached to. They felt like they are positive signs that we've moved away from the era of proselytizing to an era of fellowshipping around mutually beneficial areas. And the United States is on the right track, if you ask me.
I always like when you talk about fellowshipping. It sounds almost religious in a way.
Around democracy, around good governance, around culture, around education, around a lot of aspirational topics that Africans already have in common with the American people.
Well, Phiwo Kushle Mnyandu and Zhizhong Wang, thank you to both of you. I really do appreciate your insights and I appreciate your time. And that is it for us this week. Thank you so much to all my guests for joining me. And thanks to you, our audience, for joining us on television, radio and online. I do appreciate it. Thanks for always watching and always listening. And I will see you next time. Until then, it's goodbye.
And it'll be back before morning, before we went to school.